Folks, hello and welcome to Tavern Chat, the daily cast for all things gaming. So, the big news now is the release of the new 5e Ravenloft book. Look at that. I haven't even had anything to drink today. I can barely talk. And it's not often that I do this, because you're going to see, if you're looking at the share screen, I have a post here from N-World in their forums from an Aaron L. And I found this very interesting, and I want to touch on what he says. But I will never be able to wrap my head around Dragonborn, or especially Thieflings, walking around free in the land of the mists. Ravenloft, the Ravenloft, has always been 99% human, frightened and xenophobic, and even elves and dwarves were considered frightening alien things. Blatant dragon people and devil people showing up in a place like Barovia would be immediately hunted down with torches and pitchforks and burnt at the stake. And before anyone says that xenophobia was eliminated because xenophobia is bad, and we are more enlightened about such things today, the xenophobia was always presented as being bad. This is a horror setting. Vampires and werewolves are also bad. Xenophobia is a product of fear, which is heightened in a land of the mists. And frightened, clannish, xenophobic people are a long-established element of many types of horror. When people are frightened, they tend to clan up and stigmatize outsiders. It's unpleasant, but it is a truth about humanity, and it will be especially prevalent among all the Ravenloft P zombies. Horror is about confronting awful things and the way fear affects people. And if you try to whitewash out all the underlying social problems that arise as symptoms of the fear, only to concentrate on the literal monsters, then you eliminate most of the horror, and instead you end up with a facile cartoon version of horror. So, I found that very interesting, because here's my issues. I always felt Ravenloft read so much better than I could ever run it. And why is that? Because my adventuring party was almost, I think, everybody in my group when I was potentially running Ravenloft. I think we had one human, everybody else was demi-human. And yes, as written, Ravenloft natives are xenophobic, but they're not just xenophobic of elves and dwarves. That stranger with that strange accent, they know everybody, and we don't know you. Therefore, you're strange. You're different. That is where a lot of this horror comes from in something like Ravenloft. And to take that out of the setting is to do the setting a disservice. Again, I haven't purchased a Ravenloft product since the 2E days. I ran a few of the adventures. I would bring my party in for a session or two as they went through the mists and then dropped them out. I never ran a campaign with Ravenloft natives. That would have been interesting. But really, when you think about it, Ravenloft natives, you'd have a problem running with clerics. You wouldn't have any paladins, probably wouldn't have any rangers. And the natives of Ravenloft are generally, for the most part, a beat-down peoples, right? So where else would you see xenophobia? Well, poor neighborhoods, whether we are talking ghettos or Appalachia, and I'm not saying this to, stigmatize or label anybody, but when an outsider comes to a neighborhood that everybody knows each other, and this stranger suddenly appears, well, why are you there? Well, you're there either because you're there to cause trouble, right? You're there to fix something, or you're there to don't know, be prey, right? Think about in Ravenloft, if you come into a town unannounced and you're a party of adventurers, there's no party of adventurers traipsing through Ravenloft. So yes, and at least elves, dwarves, maybe they occasionally come through and get caught up in the mists. But dragonborn, tieflings, they do look reptilian, demonic. And you could see the reaction that would be expected. So I personally think, now this is just me, that if you're going to run a setting like Ravenloft, xenophobia is part of it. If you're going to run a setting like Midnight, all right, the classic third edition, third party setting Midnight, which I understand is coming back again. Never read it, but man, I mean, that's right, never ran it. I read it. And the reading it was very inspirational, but again, part of the issue is in these beat down societies, xenophobia comes along with it. And for an adventuring party to travel from one location to the other, you're not going to be accepted by the natives. It isn't like an open world, pretty much like the world we live in today. Although there are societies where if you went and, hey, you know, if I went to North Korea, I am sure I would be treated with a lot of xenophobia. Who's this, you know, white American coming to our closed-off society? Ravenloft is a closed-off society. So I think that taking away the xenophobia is, again, doing a disservice to it. Now, according to what I've read on this thread, which was started with all these reviews on the usual website, overwhelmingly speaking highly of the Ravenloft release, but then somebody else, great comment, have any of these websites ever spoken poorly of an official Witches of the Coast 5e release? Probably not, because they all get it for free, right? They're all getting these are review copies. We're sending this out to the media because we want positive coverage. And that should be a whole other episode of Tavern Chat that I could do one day, is talk about that, because there is this huge issue between getting something as a comped copy and then doing an effective review, which is why I don't really do much in the way of reviews. Because I remember doing a review early in the days of the blog, and it wasn't overwhelmingly negative, but it wasn't overwhelmingly positive, and it was a comped copy. And I actually got emailed by the publisher very angrily, like, how I got a copy of this, because apparently I used a review copy, and how dare a reviewer actually give a negative review. And the rules at RPGNow/drivethrough, last I checked, apparently I'm no longer a reviewer, so can't check now, was pretty much if you were going to give a negative review, and a negative review being 1 or 2 stars for a product that you had a review copy of, they would rather you did not give a review at all. Not a surprise, right? You know, negative reviews don't sell anything, but just an eye-opener. So, my question to you all, xenophobia, is it something that should be in horror or dark RPGs and settings? I mean, I could see it, like xenophobia, Call of Cthulhu. You know, you're up in the 1920s in some small New England town, and you come in with your New York accent or your Boston, and you start throwing your weight around, you're going to be treated differently than a local would be, right? That's part of xenophobia. So just some random thoughts. Folks, on the usual note, we're still in the midst of the world of COVID. So I'm going to ask you to take precautions to keep yourself, your family, your friends, your loved ones healthy and safe. I am immunized. That was my own personal choice. I'm not saying that you need to follow that choice. you know your health risks. For those that follow the comings and goings at North Texas RPG Con, Doug Rea has been fighting cancer for years. He's stage four, and he'll be going in for a procedure tomorrow. Be some surgery. I don't think I'm blowing any confidence by mentioning this. We'll probably talk about it again, Mike and I, Wednesday when we do Talk and Crit at 8 p.m. But I would like to focus the power of good thoughts, kind thoughts, positive thoughts, and prayer for those that do pray for this procedure to go well for Doug. And may it put him in a better space than what he was prior to this. Because if you understand cancer, stage four is pretty much where they don't talk about putting this in permanent remission or cure, but it's pretty much putting you in a position where it's like, well, your life expectancy, low end and high end. And Doug's already gone beyond the high end. So he's a tough bastard. So if you guys can, and girls can spare a few prayers and kind thoughts for Doug, I'd personally appreciate it. Okay? He's a stubborn bastard. He's our bastard. Folks, be safe, be well, God bless, roll those dice. And God willing, I'll be back again tomorrow. All right, folks. Hello, and welcome to Tavern Chat, the RPG cast. So, I know this is going to piss off a segment of viewers and listeners, because I am going to, believe it or not, do something that you rarely see done in this industry. I'm going to use statistics and facts. So, I'm not just going to use opinion. I won't be just talking out of my ass when I talk about Pathfinder. So, I know somebody's going to say, why are you using Roll20? Roll20 is not the industry. Roll20 is the closest we have to seeing what games are being played. It's the strongest, most used VTT. And since Wizards and Paizo and others don't really reveal their sales figures, it's the best way we can look at how trends are going. So, I went back to the fourth quarter of 2014 for the Roll20 OR report, their industry report. And back in the fourth quarter of 2014, so this is just over 6 years ago, the number one game on Roll20 was Pathfinder, coming in at nearly 24%. Of campaigns. Now, why am I giving you a percentage? Because, yes, usage numbers will increase greatly if we go through these reports, but later reports don't include usage numbers, which is kind of an annoyance. For some reason, they're hiding their numbers. Roll20 is. But we can still see what percentage of their market space. So, you know, the Roll20 app is being used by what system? So Pathfinder was number one. 5e was number two at 20%. 3.5, so that transition to leave 3.5 behind hadn't completely happened at that point. 3.5 still had nearly 16% of games, but even then, D&D 4e was 8.3%. So at that point, literally, three times as many players were playing Pathfinder than were playing 4E. And there were more players playing Pathfinder than they were playing 5E. Interesting numbers, okay? We're going to move on from that. We're going to go to the fourth quarter of 2015. By this time, 5E has taken the lead with over 31% of the player base. Pathfinder dropped under 20%. Not a huge drop. But when you look at the pure numbers, Pathfinder added about, I don't know, 15, 20% to its player base. But 5e doubled, more than doubled its player base. So the trends for 5e are going wild, right? 5e was hot. We're going to go to 2016. 5e continues its trend. It again doubles its campaigns. The campaigns using 5e rule set have doubled. What does that mean? Now they are at over 46%. Paizo has fallen down to 16%. 3.5 is down to 7%. And 4e is almost off the radar at just over 2%. 2017, this is where it becomes very interesting. Again, 5e's increased their share to over 57%. Okay. Pathfinder has dropped to about 11.5%. 3.5 is under 5%. And 4e is down to 1.39%. It's going to go off the charts after this. But not only that, 5e nearly, again, doubled their player base, whereas Pathfinder increased by about 10%. If you have 100% increase in your player base for 10%, that's huge. And it would mean that at this point, roughly five times as many players or five times as many campaigns were run in 2017 using the 5e rule set as opposed to Pathfinder. There's no data for 2018. We kind of, World 20 never offered it. And then you can see, as the moving this chart up a bit, is that they changed the way they present the numbers. Okay. At this point, 5e is at 47.54%. So they actually lost a bit of their campaign numbers over 2017. But number two was no longer Pathfinder. Number two is Call of Cthulhu. Number three is not even Pathfinder. It's uncharacterized. Number four is Pathfinder. 2019, Pathfinder comes in at 5%, or actually just under 5%. So that means that about nine to 10 times as many campaigns on Roll20 are using the 5e rule set. So this is when you get the idea that Paizo might need to change the rules. Now, when it came to Paizo's first edition of Pathfinder, first edition of Pathfinder was a response to the release of 4e, a system that many, not all, but many D&D players said, this is not the D&D that I grew up on. And Paizo, taking the OGL rules, basically said, hey, we're going to take 3.5 D&D, bring it up to 11 or 3.75 or whatever you want to call it, and presented a rule set that the player base from 3.5 wanted, right? This is what they wanted. And if you go back at some of these earlier reports, you're going to see that 3.5's player base stayed the same. 2014, just under 4,100. 2015, just under 4,100, at least campaign-wise. 2016, 4,000. 2017, 4,000. So, this is interesting that the players that stayed with 3.5 were not converting over to Pathfinder at that point. Pathfinder had gotten their conversions. And I'm not saying that Roll20 had not seen an increase in Pathfinder games, but the increase was small. Actually, from 2016 to 2017, Pathfinder saw an increase of probably just less than 10%. Now, we go on to 2019. Like I said, we see the beginnings of Pathfinder. Second edition. Between the two editions. This is 2020, sorry. 2019, Pathfinder is at just under 5%. We don't have the second edition. 2020, fourth quarter, second edition is now on the charts, right? But between the two, you're at 5.5%. That's Pathfinder 1, Pathfinder 2. And Pathfinder first edition still has 3.5% compared to Pathfinder second edition. Now, first quarter. These are the first quarter numbers. for Roll20. 5e, 52.94%. Pretty much staying the same. 52.9 was where they were at the end of last year. So didn't change. Uncharacterized, spot on. Call of Cthulhu, spot on. But Pathfinder, first edition, 3.49%. Pathfinder second edition, 1.51%. So, again, numbers shrank slightly, but together it's at 5.5%. About 1/9 of the campaigns or the amount of usage that 5e is getting. Now, why would that be? Why would Pathfinder First Edition, which was a huge success coming out of the box, be a huge success and Second Edition not be? Again, First Edition was a direct result of the dissatisfaction that so many players, D&D players, had with Fourth Edition, that they were able to go, hey, Pathfinder feels like the game I know. Why is Fifth Edition so successful? Fifth Edition basically threw away Fourth Edition and went back to its roots. So it gives the D&D players a familiar system with the branding that they're used to, and they don't have to go to a third party to play it. Now, I know people are going to go, because I've seen it in the last time I talked about Pathfinder 2 and Pathfinder. It's a great system. This is slander. This is a libel. This is not slander. It's not libel. These are fucking statistics. Okay? Pathfinder has lost market share. By extension, Paizo has lost market share. Lost a huge amount of market share to D&D, to Wizards of the Coast. Pathfinder was their attempt to get something back in there. And it's not doing the initial numbers. Now, maybe it will later. But does anybody out there think it's going to knock 5e off its pedestal? Does anybody even think that they're going to come close to 5e? I don't. And I'm not knocking it as a bad system. It's too crunchy for me. But obviously, it's a successful system. But the market has moved on. I'm an OSR gamer. The market has moved on from OSR games. It's still viable for the niche it's in. But Pathfinder is going to become niche to a large extent. And that doesn't mean anything bad, but it just means that you're not going to see it on all those game shelves. 5e. You walk into a store that's still selling RPGs, and what do you see? You see 5e everywhere, right? And if you're a third-party publisher and you see these numbers, that 5e has 9 to 10 times the player base on Roll20. Again, I'm not saying that this is spot on the market out there for everything, but it's certainly showing you that 5e is a much stronger seller than Pathfinder, either edition, is right now. Who would you write for? What system would you write for? Right? Yes, passion projects, you write for the systems that you love. Swords and Wizardry is my system. When I put stuff out, it's for Swords and Wizardry. I love it. It's a passion. I don't expect to make enough money to pay off my car bill, let alone live off of, by publishing for Swords and Wizardry. That's going to become Pathfinder. All right? My opinion. You may disagree with it, but you can't disagree with the numbers that I've put up on the screen. These numbers are what they are. Okay, if you look at Roll20 is a smaller sampling, but they are similar. So, again, what would Paizo's solution be? If they want to get back market share, it would probably mean, this strong point has always been the adventure paths, okay? People praise the adventure paths. That's why they put them out for, Savage Worlds, right? Savage Worlds is getting the classic Paizo Adventure Pass converted to Savage Worlds. So why not do it for 5e? Aside from the fact that you are directly supporting your competitor, but look how huge that market is. So if you want to tell me that your personal experience is that Everybody you know plays Pathfinder 2E and loves it. That's fine. And if it's a game that you enjoy, you should love it. I love playing OSR games. I know that they are not the market, right? They're not. 5e is the market. Does it mean that Pathfinder 2 is not a good system? I'm not saying that. I am saying that according to these numbers, there has not been a huge conversion of Pathfinder 1 players to Pathfinder 2. You know, and there's still 1% of their player base still playing D&D 3.5. Think about that. And by the way, Starfinder isn't even on the list of their top systems being played. How far back do I have to go for Starfinder? End of 2020, Starfinder came in at 2/3%, 0.66. Okay? And again, I'm not saying Starfinder is not a good system, and it's not a good game. I am saying the customer base is not there. And if there's no customer base, there's no the money isn't there. And let's be honest, Paizo is in it to make a profit. All right, these big publishers are in it not just to put product in and to make you happy. They're hoping to make you happy so you buy more product. They can make a lot more customers happy by publishing adventure paths for 5e. That's my opinion. You may disagree with it. You got a voicemail. Leave it. Leave your voicemail. I'm happy to listen to them. I'm happy to play them back. Again, I know that people are going to be like all bent out of shape because he's saying these bad things about Pathfinder. I'm showing you the statistics. I'm showing you the numbers from Roll20, the VTT, or if you're in a world of COVID, where everybody has flocked to. And these are the numbers. All right? These are the numbers. If you like Paizo as a company, do you like what they create? Do you prefer? Do you like them because of the system they create or the adventures that they publish? Because I'll be honest with you, I still read their adventures, and I don't play Pathfinder, never have. But the adventures are well written, and there's enough uniformity to that system that I can look at Pathfinder and understand what it is in the AD&D frame of mind that my mind tends to translate to. Okay, so. Let me know what your thoughts are. 347-509-5168 is the number for the voicemail. If you're listening on Anchor, you can always leave a message on Anchor. We are in the midst of the world of COVID. I mentioned COVID. I am immunized. Okay? That's a personal decision. I'm not telling you what decisions to make in your personal life. You know your risk factors. I will say this. Use your common sense. If you're not healthy, you can't help others. And I think we all want to keep our family, our friends, our loved ones, our community healthy and safe, however that is. And you can't do that if we ourselves are sick. So just use your common sense when it comes to that stuff. Be safe, be well, God bless, roll those dice. Knock on wood. I'll be back again tomorrow with Joe the Lawyer, Dungeons, Dragons, and Discourse. All right, folks. No, actually, no, it's Iron Rations. My bad. Dungeons, Dragons, and Discourse is myself and Glenn. Ugh, I'm losing my mind. Old age. All right, folks. On that note, I'm out of here. Laters.